Good morning. Today's daf in Chulin is Kuf Lamed Ches. Last daf today of the 11th parak in the Sechta. We are on Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. We are starting right in the middle of the Amud. Shuma Vishishim. Sorry, we're just a couple lines above that. Kufa. The Gemara now is going to go and record what we learned yesterday regarding the amounts of Reishis Hagez. Now, in terms of the amounts of Reishis Hagez, so we know there's a mitzvah in the Torah that when you have sheep and you are shearing your sheep, so the first fleece of the wool that comes off goes to the Kohen. That is the mitzvah of Reishis Hagez in its most simplified form. We learned together in the Mishnah that there has to be a certain amount of sheep that you shear. The number is 5, although that's subject to a machlokus. In the Mishnah, the machlokus between Beisham and Beisil. Beisham says 2. Beisil says 5 sheep. We also saw in yesterday's daf that there is actually a third opinion as well. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, which, as the Gemara records, he had a Kabbalah, a tradition going back to Chag Zechariah Malachi, that the correct number is 4, but just keeping within our Mishnah, so Beis Hillel says that the number is 5 sheep. Okay, so that is the number of sheep that need to be shorn in order for the mitzvah to be kicked off, but there also has to be a requisite amount of actual wool that comes off of these 5 sheep. What is that amount? So that's the machlokas. The machlokas in the Mishnah between the Tanaim, between Rabbi Dos ben Hurkanus, and that of the Chachamim. The opinion of Dos ben Hurkanus is that you need mana press coming off from each of the sheep. A mana is a weight. Comes out, we're going to assume that a mana is 25 salayim, although that assumption is going to change a little bit over the course of today's daf. But we're going to assume now that a mana is 25, so a mana and a half is 25 times 1.5. So that is 37.5. 37.5, according to Rav Dosa ben Orkanus, from each of the sheep. And so that comes out now to a total 37.5 times 5. So that is the total number of salayim that need to come of weight of fleece that comes off of the animal. That's to get the obligation going. Then the subsequent question is, how much of that do you give over to the Kohen? So seemingly the Mishnah took a position that as well, and that is 5 salayim. So that's all the opinion of the Rabbi Dos ben Hurkanus. What's the opinion of the Chachamim? So in the Mishnah, the Chachamim said that, kol shehein, that all you need to do is just shear any amount off of the animal, and there's an obligation of Reishis Hagez. Now, what did the Chachamim mean when they say kol shehein, any amount? So on that, we saw 4 opinions amongst the Amoraim yesterday. So the opinion of Rav is that a kol shehein is a manu pras, meaning a total of a manu pras. So that means that coming off of the 5 sheep, you need a total of 37.5 slimes worth of wool to come off. Rav does stipulate that it has to be mechuma shos, it has to be equitably divided amongst the 5 sheep. So that means 37.5, where each one is making an equitable contribution to get to that 37.5. Then the Gemara recorded 3 other opinions. Shmuel says it has to be 60 slime in total. The Gemara quotes the Emor of Yochanan that it's 6 in total. And Rav Elazar says when the Mishnah says kol shehein, it actually means kol shehein. It means any amount, and still there's going to be an obligation of Reishis Hagez. The Gemara noted that of those 4 opinions, the ones that are really difficult to understand is any number that's less than 5. Meaning, let's say, for example, the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. Any amount means any amount. How could that be? Meaning, the Mishnah says, and then in turn, you have to give 5 slime over to the Kohen. 5 slimes worth of wool over to the Kohen. If the obligation starts off with, let's say, for example, 1 sela. So if I only have 1 sela of wool, how can I then turn around and give 5 slime over to the Kohen? So the Gemara reinterpreted the Mishnah. The Mishnah, here's what the Mishnah must have meant. The Mishnah meant the obligation to give to the Kohen is whatever the obligation is, meaning kol shehein. And again, you can go with any one of the interpretations that we saw in the Gemara, any one of the 4 interpretations. But in terms of when the Mishnah says that you have to give 5 slime over to the Kohen, all the Mishnah meant by that is that let's say you have a lot of wool, right? In other words, you are ending up with hundreds and hundreds of slime worth of wool, and now you're going to turn around and you're going to give a contribution, a distribution over to the Kohanim. So once you have now a lot of wool to work with, so the minimum you should be giving to each Kohen is 5 slime. Why should that be the minimum amount given to each Kohen? Because that's significant. Anything less than 5 slime is not really a significant amount of wool. A Kohen can't really turn around and do anything with that amount of wool. And so therefore, give the Kohen each one of them a minimum of 5 slime. But in terms of what is the amount, that triggers the mitzvah. So for that, you can go with any one of the sheets that we saw above. And the Gemara now is going to go back to a point that was made and yesterday's daf, and that is the statement of Rav Shmuel. Rav Shmuel says, proportionally, how much you give to the Kohen? 1/60. Good. That means to say that let's say you have 60 slime of wool coming off of the animal. So now we know that we have an obligation of rishis hagez we have to give. How much should you be giving? 1/60. So the reason why I chose the number 60 is because it's nice and simple. So if you have 60 slime of wool coming off the sheep, so give one sella over to the Kohen. That's what we learned in yesterday's daf. And from there, we're going to pick it up right where we left off. Gufa. So the Gemara is going to return to this statement. Rav Shmuel Amar Tavai, Reishis Hagez, Bishishim. So when it comes to the mitzvah, Reishis Hagez, subproportionally, give the Kohen 1/60. Truma Bishishim. When it comes to the mitzvah of Truma, that also is the 60th, and Peah Bishishim. And as far as the mitzvah of Peah is concerned, that's also Shishim as well. So three distributions that are going to be given to the Kohen that all work with the numbers of 1/60. 1/60 is the amount that you should be giving to the Kohen in terms of percentages. Okay, a little bit less than 2%. Now, Truma B'Shishim, now the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Now, we all know. In terms of giving Truma over to a Kohen, so what is the number that you have to give to the Kohen? So, a 60th, is that accurate? V'anan tanan Truma ayin yafa echam arbaim. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. We always thought that there is no absolute amount of Truma that has to be given over to a Kohen, and in fact, it is a range. And in fact, if you want to be a generous person, you should give a 40th. So 40th is a little bit over 2%. So so why over here are we saying that Truma is the 60th when meanwhile the Mishnah and Truma tells us very clearly you should be giving a 40th. So the Gemara says the Araisa Bishishim Derabbanan Ba'arbaim. So the Gemara suggests now as follows. Well, maybe the amount to give minimally is the 60th. Okay, I know for those of you who do not love math, but this is basic fractions. The 60th obviously is going to be a smaller amount to give to the Kohen. So maybe Minatora, the amount to give is 1/60. And in terms of the base minimum biblical amount. And then the Chachamim said, but you know what? I recommend being more generous and don't give a 60th, but rather give a 40th. So that's the Gemara suggestion right now. Daraisa b'shishim v'hamar shmuel. So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, v'hamar shmuel, chita achas potersa zakri. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. We also have to conflate this with the statement that was made by Shmuel. Shmuel says that in terms of the mitzvah of truma, so how much truma do you have to take off the pile in order for the pile to become no longer tevel, tevel vis-a-vis truma? So chita achas, you just take off one kernel. Meaning that if I were to distill the mitzvah of truma and ask the question, how much truma needs to be taken off so that the pile now is considered no longer tevel of truma? 1 grain. Once you take off 1 grain, the rest of the pile is totally now good. Now I say totally good, by the way, I'm exaggerating, hyperventilating just a little bit. It's not totally good. You have to take off Maaser Rishon, you have to take off Maaser Sheni. But vis-a-vis Truma, you are good. You're cleared from the Truma. So now you're talking about a 40th. We're talking about a 60th. We're talking about 1 grain regardless of how big the pile is. That's the opinion of Shmuel. So the Gemara says, Daraisa Kedish Shmuel. So the Gemara says, okay. So now what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to revisit, regroup, and state over now as follows. If it is a Chi of Daraisa, so then Kedish Shmuel. So then we're going to go like Shmuel. Meaning, right, there, as far as amounts are concerned, how much I have to give to the Kohen? So 1 grain taken off from a large pile, regardless of how large the pile is. So you have now removed the obligation of Truma. Truma now has been taken off. However, Dirabanan. But the Chachamim said, okay, that's Me'ikar Hadin. But now consider, you're going to hand over to the Kohen 1 grain, 1 kernel. The Kohen's going to look at you. I'm not sure if you're going to get a thank you. And he'll obviously, what you're giving him is something that is just not, it's not appropriate. Appropriate, I mean by that, just simply, it's what is he going to do with 1 kernel? So the Chachamim said, okay, so what you should now do is you should give him a significant amount. When we talk about a significant amount, it means something that is appropriate. So derabanan, so now the Chachamim gave the measurements. Bidarais achad me'arbaim, and derabanan bidarabanan b'shishim. So now it depends. What kind of truma am I giving him? Am I giving him truma that's truma daraisa? So then give him a good amount, a 40th. If it's truma on something that only is fundamentally obligated midrabanan, so then give him a 60th. So that's how the Gemara sets up all three of these shiurim. Now, when we talk about truma daraisa versus truma derabanan, what do we mean by that? So you can count on Rashi every single time on this discussion in terms of what's obligating truma min haTorah versus what's obligating truma min haDerabanan. What's obligating truma min haTorah? So wine, oil, and any one of the five grains. What constitutes truma min haDerabanan? Everything else, all other fruit. So min haTorah, the only obligation to take off truma min haDeraisa is only olives and grapes and the five grains. And as far as everything else is concerned, that is only chayev midrabanan, all of the fruits. So that means to say now, this is as the Gemara finishes up this discussion of amounts for truma, so mi ikar hadin, according to the strict letter of the law, chitachas potersa zakri. You take off one grain, one kernel, and you are going to be removing the truma obligation from the rest of the pile. However, if now you want to also satisfy the dinder rabbanan, so how much are you going to take off? So if the fruit, if the produce that you're taking off is a chiyuv d'oraisa, so then take off a 40th. If it's only chiyuv d'rabbanan, take off a 60th. That's the way our Gemara sets it up. Elsewhere, we have this idea that 40th and 50th depends on your level of generosity. If you're extraordinarily generous, give a 40th. If you're a miserly individual, give a 60th. So elsewhere in the Gemara, we get the impression that the range over there really represents where you stand in terms of your propensity to give. But our Gemara over here certainly sets it up that the range is based on whether the level of obligation is the rice of the Rabbanan. That is all by Truma. We're up to Peah. So Peah B'Shishim. So as far as the mitzvah Peah, so you give a 60th. Now, the mitzvah Peah, once again, pretty clear in the Torah, but pretty unclear. Pretty clear in Torah in terms of what the Torah demands of us, and that is give a corner of the field over to the Aniyim. So you have a field, let's assume it's square, rectangular in shape. So what you're going to do is you're going to mark off one of the corners and section off one of the corners and allow the Ani to take from the one of the corners so that that corner is dedicated and designated for the Ani. That part's clear. What isn't clear, however, is how much of the corner. So you're going to section off a corner of the field, good, but proportionally, how much of that corner is relative to the rest of the field, the Torah does not say. And not only does the Torah not say, now we are making the argument right now that it has to be a 60th of the field. On the other hand, the Mishnah and Peah. Now, I'd like to say we all know the Mishnah and Peah. We all do know the Mishnah and Peah, right? This Mishnah and Peah is put into our Siddur. It's put into davening right after Birchas HaTorah. V'atanan, Eilu Dvarim She'elam Shir. And these are the things that don't have a shir. So there is no fixed amount in the Torah. And they are Peah, Bikurim, V'Arayon. So the Mishnah over here only lists three of the things. We're really interested only in Peah. The other two mentioned in the Mishnah is not relevant to our discussion. The other two, Bikurim, that's the mitzvah of giving first fruits of the season over to the Kohen, putting it in a basket, bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash, putting it on the Mizbeach, saying the Amira, right, this first night of Seder. We're going to be saying the Amira over again as part of the Seder. And that's the mitzvah of Bikurim. How much fruit do I have to give of my first fruits? Min haTorah, no fixed amount. Rei Ayon, that's the mitzvah of Olas Re'iyah. The carbon that you bring to the Beis HaMikdash. So how much does it have to be? How much does it have to be worth? So no fixed amount in the Torah. But we're right now interested in the first item that's mentioned. That's, of course, Peah. By the way, this Mishnah is said over after Birchas HaTorah because this Mishnah also says Talmud Torah as having no fixed amount. But anyway, Peah is no fixed amount. So once again, the Gemara is going to make resolution between that Mishnah and Peah and what we learn right now. So the Gemara says that's right. Min haTorah, there is no fixed amount, but the Chachamim said, what are you going to do? You're going to section off the smallest corner imaginable for the Aniyim, and that's just not, without giving a recommendation on how much they give off. So again, it'll really fluctuate based on the person's tendency to give. And before we get to that kind of point, so the Chachamim give their recommendation. Now, I say recommendation, it's more than a recommendation, meaning it's now a sheer midrabanan. So my kamash lantanina and ain't pochasin lapea mishishim. Afa pisham rapea in lashir. So sorry. My kamash lantanina. Now the Gemara is bothered by the following. Right now we have it as a memra de amorayim. It's a statement on the Amorayim that you have to take off a 60th. Now, okay, that's very good, but at the same time, it's a Mishnah. Ain't pochasin lapea mishishim. That in terms of the base minimum amount, it needs to be a 60th. So afa pisham rapea in lashir. Even though the opening Mishnah and Peah says that it does not have a requisite amount. Okay, so in other words, so right now we have a Mishnah that says that a minimum is a 60th. So the Gemara says, Hasam aratacha b'chus aretz. So the Gemara says like this. Okay, and here's what we're going to say. That as far as the mitzvah of Peah vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael is concerned, there is a fixed amount. Meaning, even though the Mishnah says ein lashir means that there's no upper limit of how much you can give. How big a corner do you give to the aniyim? You could give as much as you feel as you want. In terms of a minimum base amount, min ha-Torah, when I say min ha-Torah, I mean you're in Eretz Yisrael. So for that, you give a 60th. Once you're outside of Eretz Yisrael, so now, min ha-Torah, there's no amount. Min ha-Torah, there's no amount, neither maximum amount nor minimum amount as well. Along comes the Chachamim, and this is what the Amoraim are adding, is that there is also a recommended amount outside of Eretz Yisrael as well, and that should be a 60th even for a field outside of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, Adkan. So that brings us now to the end of the distributions, all having shishim. So we talked about shishim in terms of Reishis Hagez, in terms of Truma, and in terms of the mitzvah of Peah. An ensuing discussion. So now Isi ben Hini goes to Eretz Yisrael, and he's now encountering Rabbi Yochanan, learning Mishnahs together with his son, and he's saying over now the Mishnah, not any Mishnah, our Mishnah that describes the sheep, and when going over the Mishnah, so he's now using the word for sheep. And now, if you look carefully at our Mishnah, when the Mishnah mentions sheep, so, right, our Mishnah, Reishis Hagez, Noeg Baretz, V'chutz Haaretz, etc., etc. And then the Mishnah, when actually using the word for sheep, so, B'meruva Mord, Reishis Hagez, Eino Noeg, Ela B'Recheilos. So it says the words sheep in the plural, it says it Recheilos. So now, as they're going over this Mishnah, so a small syntax issue. So, I'm sorry. So Rav Yochanan Dekamasin Lelebrei Recheilim. So when he was teaching over the Mishnah to his son, he said Recheilim. Now, keep in mind, we're talking about Mishnahs, we're talking about Amoraim, their knowledge and their memorization and their commitment to proper Nusach HaMishnah, obviously was as exact as one can imagine. And so over here, the criticism is as subtle as you can get. You said the word Recheilim and you said it wrong. The Mishnah has Recheilos. And you're teaching your son the Mishnah, and you're teaching it Rechelim. So Amar Lei Asne Rechelos. So he says to him, okay, let me just make a small correction. It's not Rechelim, it's rather Rechelos. Amar Lei Kedichsiv Rechelim Asayim. So he says to him, what do you mean? How could I be wrong? I'm following a pasuk in the Torah. The Torah, when describing Rechelim, it says it in the masculine, Rechelim. So you're telling me that I'm wrong? How could I be wrong? The Torah, when describing sheep in the plural, says Rechelim. I got to be right. Amr Lei, so he says to him, no, not necessarily. Lashon Torah la'atzman, lashon chachamim la'atzman. As far as diktuk, as far as nusach is concerned, so the chachamim have their own way of speaking. And so even though, yes, it's true, in Tanakh you're going to find it formulated in syntax one way, but as far as lashon chachamim is concerned, so there's going to be subtle differences. Okay, so the so that is step number one in terms of a discussion that takes place between Hini, Isi Bar Hini and Rav Yochanan. So Amalei Man Reish Sidra BeBavel. So now Rav Yochanan wants some information. In other words, someone just came up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and this affords Rav Yochanan the opportunity to sort of say catch up on what's going on, news in Bavel. So Amalei Man Reish Sidra BeBavel. So who is Rosh Hashiva in Bavel? So Amalei Abba Richa. So the response of Isi Bar Hini is that it's none other than Rav. Now, we refer to him as Rav, and meanwhile, his informal name, or his proper name, is Abba Richa. Now, that translates literally as tall Abba. Now, as far as the nickname of being tall, so Rashi over here writes, Rav Kari Aricha Sha'aruch Bedorahaya, Kedamim Behamapels Benida. So Rashi over here says, tall over here, not a characterization of how vertical he was and how high off the ground he was, but in terms of his stature. So that's why he was referred to as tall. Now, Abba over here could, in fact, be his actual proper name, meaning his name could have actually been Abba. On the other hand, Abba could also just simply been a reverential title describing that he's a person of importance, and therefore he's referred to as Abba. In any regard, when Isi Bar Hini was describing Rav, he didn't just simply say Rav, which would have been the most respectful way to describe him. But rather he referred to him as Abba Richa, which is a, however you want to interpret it, is a more informal way to describe him. So Amar Lei, so Rav Yochanan, when he hears this, Rav Yochanan says, I cannot believe that that's how you just described him. Abba Richa Karisla, you refer to him as Abba Richa? Dechirna. So Rav Yochanan says, I remember. Can have a yisivna acher yizayin shurin acher ed rav kamei the Rebbe. So I'm going to go back to my time since Rav Yochanan when I was sitting in shir. So I was sitting in shir, and whose shir was I sitting in? None other than Rebbe shir. And he says, and I'm reporting that I myself was sitting back in the 17th row. Where you sat in terms of rows was basically it was a declaration of where you stood in terms of your position in shir. Meaning if you were in the front row, so that means that you were not just somebody who liked listening very carefully, but it meant that you were somebody of stature. And if you're sitting back in the 17th row, so obviously you're in shir, you're sitting in shir, but you're 17 rows behind the front. Okay, I don't want to report the where exactly I sat in shir. My days in back in YU when I had the schutz of learning with Rav Braunschweigel, it was a very big shir. Almost 100 guys in the shir. So, and I remember very clearly why I sat in the shir. And let's just say I was not in the front. That's a nice way to say it. So the so over here when describing Rav Yochanan's giving a description. So I sat in the 17th row, and Vidnafke is the cook in the nor mi puma de rav lepumi de rabbi or mi puma de rabbi lepumi de rav, and giving a very graphic description of the kind of Torah that was. That went back and forth between Rav and Rebbe. So fire, so flames of fire was coming out of the mouth of Rebbe, and flames of fire were coming out of the mouth of Rav. Now over here in this description, so we don't have to take it so literally, but what we do have to understand is that it was a very intense discussion that was taking place between Rav and Rebbe. V'leis ani yada mahin amrin. And in fact, the level of discourse that took place between those two was on such a high level. Quite frankly, says Rav Yochanan, I didn't fully understand what they were saying. They were on that kind of level. So now let's get this straight. Rav Yochanan says to Isi Barhini, you are now describing Rav in the not most reverential terms that you can describe. And meanwhile, I sat in shir. I know what kind of Talmid Chacham he is. I know the kind of discourse that he had with Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi. The At Abba Aricha Karisle, and you have the chutzpah to just simply describe him in the informal Abba Aricha. So basically now that was a tremendous amount of Musar that was given from Rav Yochanan to Isi Barhini. Okay. Armor lay ihu. Okay, and the discussion goes on. Meaning, okay, so he got the Musar, and I'm prepared to say that once he got the Musar from Rav Yochanan, he learned his lesson. But now the discussion goes on, because now where do they talk in Torah? So Reishis Hagez Bekama. So how much do you give for Reishis Hagez? So what is the amount? So Amar Lei B'Shishim. So he says that the amount to give is 60. Right now, B'Shishim over here means in 60. And presumably what he means by that is that this is the amount that you need in order to trigger the mitzvah of Reishis Hagez. Meaning, like we discussed in yesterday's daf. Meaning the amount of total wool that's necessary in order to get the mitzvah going. So how many salim do you need? So you need 60 salim worth of wool. That's not the amount you give to the Kohen. Again, we can go back to what we said in yesterday's daf, what I reviewed at the beginning of Shir today. But 60 is the number that you need, 60 of total wool. Now, v'hanan b'chol she'en tanan. Now, Isi Barhini said, but wait 1 second, I don't understand. The Mishnah says kol she'en, and that was a big part of yesterday's daf. Meaning, the Chachamim are certainly disagreeing with Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus. The Chachamim say that you don't need that much, you need a kol she'hu. And so Isi Barhini says, how could you call a kol she'hu 60 slime? So Amar Lei. So Rav Yochanan once again says back to Isi Barhini, Im Kain, Ma Ben Livalach. Look, I also know the Mishnah. And I could also read the Mishnah, and I can also interpret the Mishnah in its most literal sense. But if I were to do that, then there literally is no difference between me and you. Meaning, I know the Mishnah, but I also know the correct interpretation of the Mishnah. Meaning, I'm Rav Yochanan, I went to Shir, I was sitting in Shir with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So I'm telling you that, although the language of the Mishnah is Kol Shehein, but I'm also telling you that that part is part of the Masorah of the Torah Sheba'al Peh, so I know that Kol Shehein means 60. It's a lot, it's not a Kol Shehu. Okay, but the Mishnah is just simply talking in relative terms. Meaning to the position of Rabbi Dosa ben Horkanus, who says, you need a lot, and we could say it's 37.5 times 5, where it comes out to something like 187. So you need a lot. So the Chachamim are simply saying you don't need that much. But Kol Shehein does not mean any amount. There still is a requisite amount. And I have the Masorah. And you read the Mishnah literally? Good, you read the Mishnah literally. I read the Mishnah literally, but I also have part of the tradition as well. So Rav Yochanan, once again, it's another opportunity where basically he puts this other Amora in his place. Okay. Ki asra Rav Dimi Amar Reishis Hagez, Rav Amar B'Shishim Rav Yochanan, Mishim Rav Yana Amar B'Shesh. So Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael, and He quotes that as far as the mitzvah ratios, I guess, how much wool do you need in order to trigger the mitzvah? So Rav says 60, Rav Yochanan is quoted saying 6. Now, Amalei Abayi L'Rav Dimi, Ancheslan Chada V'Akshalan Chada. Okay, good and bad, right? Good news and bad news, right? You made one position totally understandable, and the other position very difficult. So Bishlam to Rav Yochanan, to Rav Yochanan Lokasha Hadide Hadarabe. So he says, look, as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, so you remember for Rav Yochanan from yesterday, Rav Yochanan from yesterday said that if you have 6, so you give 5 to the Kohen and 1 you retain for yourself. And over here, he's also saying 6 as well. And meanwhile, in the dialogue that we had just moments earlier, we had Rav Yochanan saying 60. So the Gemara says, but that's fine, meaning Rav Yochanan's own position is 60, but his Rebbeim are of the opinion that it's 6. So fine. So as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, I'm not really that bothered. So, but Ela Derava Derav Kasha. But it's certainly difficult because if you remember Rav from yesterday's daf, Rav said, how much wool do you need from all 5 sheep in order to trigger the mitzvah? So he said, Manu Upras, which is 37 and a half salayim. And now we have recorded that Rav saying that it's 60 salayim. That's a discrepancy, a significant discrepancy. Daha Amar Rav Manu Upras. So how do I resolve that discrepancy? So the Gemara's response, Derava, Derav Nami Lokasha, my manu dekamar ben arbeim salayim, da'avalei b'shishim. So the Gemara says, I can resolve Rav's position as well. Rav said manu upras. We assume that a mana is 25 salayim because most of the time a mana is equivalent to 25 salayim. Throughout all shots when we're assuming a currency, so the standard currency, the standard mana currency is equivalent to 25 salayim. So when we said manu upras, so we assumed that it was 25 multiplied by 1.5, so we assume it's 37.5 salayim. Good. But over here, however, it could very well be that when referencing a money, there is another money that was used of a higher weight and a higher currency equivalent to 40 salayim. Now, assuming that the money is equivalent to 40 salayim, so what's 40 times 1.5? So that's 60. So that could be now what Rav meant when he said manu pras. He was referencing the higher currency money equivalent to 40 salayim, which makes now for a total of 60. And now we have agreement between Rav and Rav. Now, v'tni tana, mana ben arbeim salayim. So the Gemara now on the top of Kuf Lamed Ches says, wait 1 second. It is highly unusual that the mana that's being referred to is a mana that's worth 40 salayim. There is such a mana that exists. But typically, the mana is a 25 sela amount. And so you're telling me now that a Mishnah is going to be referencing a mana worth 40 salayim? So the Gemara says, look, it is unusual, but it's not unprecedented. We do have a Mishnah that describes a mana being 40 salayim. Where can that Mishnah be found? Of course, in Kalim. And by the way, in Kalim, it's on the Mishnayos of Kalim, it's in the Tosefta of Kalim. Okay, but it's there, it's out there. So Chemes Chadasha, so we're talking about a new jug. A new jug, presumably it's made out of leather, some sort of leather pouch, Alpha Pisha Mekabels Rimonim Tahora. Now, you're starting to put it together, but it's not fully together yet, and there are gaping holes in it. When I say gaping holes, a pomegranate can fall right through. So right now it's an unfinished product. Anything which is an unfinished product is not a kli as of yet, and it's not ready to be makabel tuma. It's therefore tahor. It's not susceptible to tuma because it's not a finished kli. However, tafra v'nikra, shiru kamosu rimonim. However, once it's fully finished, and now it starts to tear, as long as it can hold a pomegranate, so then it's going to be makabel tuma. It's going to be a kli. So once it's a kli, it takes a little bit more for it to undo the status of being a kli. Okay, good. And Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Amer, Kipikios shel shesi, achas me'arba, b'mana ben arbim salayim. So in terms of the gaping hole in this jug that's going to render the kli no longer kli, it's got to be where balls of thread of the shesi. Remember, there are two types of threads. There's the horizontal and there's the vertical. The shesi is going up and down. That's the vertical. So it's these balls of thread back in the day. These were standard spools, so even though it sounds arbitrary, but it must have been that they were standard. And in terms of the weight of these spools, it's 1/4 of a mana, and specifically a mana that's 40 salayim. So basically, the only reason why we brought this Mishnah down is because it is out there. There is a Mishnah that describes a mana of 40 salayim, and so, yes, it's unusual, yes, it's unlikely, but no, it's not totally unprecedented. Okay. The Kamenosin law. Okay, as we move on to the next topic, so let's just quickly recap. So basically, what do we have from between yesterday's daf and today's daf? A lot of numbers. And honestly, it can be a little bit confusing as you try to navigate through all these numbers. But the basic idea is that the in terms of ratios again, so there's a requisite number of sheep that have to be shorn in order for the mitzvah to be triggered. Let's assume the number is 5, even though we learned yesterday that there is an opinion of Rav Yossi that's 4, but let's assume that the number is 5, that's Beis Hillel's position. In terms of how much wool has to be taken off from these 5 sheep in order to get the mitzvah going. So let's assume like Rav's position, utzmanu upras. Now as far as manu upras is concerned, so we could offer 2 different numbers in terms of how much wool that is. It could either be 37.5, if you're assuming the standard mana, or if you're assuming the non-standard mana, it could be 60. Either way, so those are just 2 more numbers to consider. And then in terms of how much to give to the Kohen, so a 60th. The Mishnah says you should be giving 5 slime worth over to the Kohen. As we learned in yesterday's daf, that's only when you have a lot of wool. But regardless of if you don't have a lot of wool, but nevertheless the chiyuv has kicked in, so you give a 60th. So to make it nice and simple now, so let's say he took 60 slime weight of wool off of the sheep. So now the mitzvah has kicked in according to Rav's position, even the opinion that we just recorded within Rav. And of that, you give 1 stela over to the Kohen. 1 stela is worth of wool over to the Kohen. That is as simplified as I can make it.
What was the definition of when you have a lot of wool? The lot of wool was how much? He said when you have a lot of wool, you give more.
So what? No, in other words, there's no definition for that. Meaning, if you have a significant amount of wool to give, and now doesn't matter. In other words, and now you're in a position where you can give more than 5 slime. So then you should give each coin no less than 5 slime. The common saying low. Now, how much you give to each coin? So Tana lo shiel banena v'inenu lo elo shiel banena coin v'amod al chamish slime. Now, in terms of the recommended amount to give to the Kohen, which is 5 slime, so you're responsible for cleaning out the wool. And in terms of, in other words, we're not describing who's responsible to clean it. We just mean in terms of how much he's going to be getting after all the impurities are removed. So the recommendation is to give 5 slime over to the Kohen. Fine. But those 5 slime are after impurities are removed. So the wool is going to have dirt and little pebbles and stones, and it needs to be washed. So the Bryce is just simply telling us, so that's the owner's responsibility to clean that. After it's clean, then you're going to give 5 slime worth of clean wool over to the Kohen. Good. Kedei la'asos begakatan. So now we're up to the next part of the Mishnah, which is, why is 5 slime the recommended amount? Because with 5 slime of wool, you can make the smallest garment. Now remember, this is a matnas kahuna. It's a distribution given over to the Kohen. And presumably, the clothing that we're describing that he's using is going to be bidik kahuna. So the Gemara now is discussing what exactly is the minimum amount vis-a-vis a big day kahuna. Menani mili? Sorry. Kidei la'asos begakatan, menani mili, amar Yishuv ben Levi, amar kralam al-lasharis, davashir rai l'sheiros. So fine. So we saw this drasha yesterday, that we're reviewing it again today. And that is that the purpose of giving him the wool is so that he could be serving in the base of Mikdash. Good. And in the psukim, it reads that way in the psukim. Meaning, if you go through the psukim, where Rashi's Agez is located, we've quoted this psukim already numerous times, in the beginning of the 18th parak of Sefer Devarim and Parsha Shoftim, so you'll see very clearly that the whole purpose is Sheiros. So far, so good. Mainihu. What is the garment worn by the Kohen that constitutes the smallest amount of material? So the Gemara says, Avni, it's identified as the belt. Now, it's got to be the belt, and Rashi over here points out, right away, Mainihu Avnate. Rashi over here, by the way, covers both sides of the Amud. No Tosfos on this Amud. It's Rashi on the right and left column. We're on the right column. We're halfway down. My new Avnate. Shukata should be big de kahuna. The Kimlu Rabban Shiachul Asos Mechamish Salayim. So over here, so the Chachamim did their testing, and they've come to the realization that 5 Salayim is the amount of wool that you need in order to make a belt. Tsemer Shari in Kulo Tsemer Ela Kalimhu. Remember, says Rashi, that as it relates to the belt of the Kohen, it's not made up 100% wool. It's actually a cross between wool and linen. Now you're wondering to yourself, isn't that shatnez? You don't have to wonder. I'll tell you, it's shatnez. And yet for the mitzvah of Big Day Kahuna, so the mitzvah of Big Day Kahuna are going to override and are going to supersede the Isser of shatnez. Isser ase doche lo sase. So the positive commandment is going to override the negative prohibition. So over here now, when looking at the Big Day Kahuna, so the belt is a small material, and on top of that, it's not even made up 100% of wool. So therefore, it's a small garment made with not even 100% wool. That is identified as the article of garment that's worn by the Kohen, where it would be significant that he can make a belt out of 5 salim. So the Gemara says, Ema Me'il. So the Gemara says, okay, but what about enough wool in order to make the mill? Now the mill is the robe that flows all the way down that's worn by the Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara is now suggesting, well, maybe it's the mill. So the Gemara says, wait one second, you're going in the wrong direction. We're looking for the smallest article of clothing. And now you're pointing to the mill, which is a long flowing robe that's worn by the Kohen Gadol. Tafasta Murba, lo tafasta, tafasta Mua tafasta. Look, when looking for Shiurim, so you should be as conservative as possible. Lowercase c, obviously. You should be as conservative as possible. Meaning, whenever looking for an amount, you know that if you've selected the smallest amount, you know you're in good shape. Once you go anything larger than that, who knows if you're right? Meaning, maybe you're right, but maybe you're not. So when you're looking at Shiurim, always go with the smallest number possible. Really interesting Rashi, which I will not go through right now, but I'm just highlighting. Rashi over here, where's the source in the Torah of Tafas Meruba Lo Tafasta? So Rashi identifies, he quotes a Medrash Toras Kohanim, a Braisa from Toras Kohanim, and it actually comes out of last week's Parsha, Parsha's Metzora. So see Rashi for the source of this halacha. Anyway, but we're going to go on in the Gemara. So fine, so we have now seemingly identified the smallest article of clothing. Ve'ema kippah shel tzemer. Now what about the kippah? Now it's interesting that you're seeing the word kippah. What's also interesting is Rashi actually describes it as being a kippah, meaning that the Kohen Gadol wore some sort of cap. Rashi ve'em a kippah shel tzemer shehi muetus me'avnet v'afi b'chal she'os k'dichsiv al psil ha'tcheles v'tcheles amrihi. I want to really the next Rashi, sorry. Kippah kova katan. So Rashi describes it as some sort of cap worn by the Kohen Gadol. Now you got to wonder, by the way, it's a very interesting Rashi, a little bit challenging. You got to wonder, where in the Torah does the Torah describe a small kippah worn by the Kohen Gadol? Meaning we know that he wears a hat, as does every Kohen, wear a hat in their head. But in terms of a kippah, as we say in the vernacular, meaning that's the term that we use to describe in the vernacular, so it's a really interesting Rashi. Most probably what the Gemara is describing, and by the way, we're going to see in the Gemara itself, is the bands of wool that are used to attach the tzitz to his head. The tzitz is that head plate, the golden head plate, that's worn by the Kohen Gadol, but it doesn't go around the full circumference of the head. The head plate is just basically covering the front. Okay, how do you secure it? So there are two straps of wool that are securing the tzitz to the head. So, and I understand that Rashi doesn't say that, and Rashi is not really seemingly describing that, but it could very well be that that's what Rashi meant, even though it's a little bit hard to read that in Rashi. But anyway, we see it in the Gemara, as we're going to go now in the Gemara. Detani kippah shel tzemer ha'isa menechas b'rosh kohen gadol ve'aleha sis nosein l'kayim ha'shenemar v'samto so al psil t'cheles. Okay, so the Gemara now is describing, and I'll say the Gemara kipshuto. It's describing the two straps of wool that are connecting the tzitz to the head of the Kohen Gadol. Now one can easily imagine that constitutes a much smaller amount of material than the belt that goes around the Kohen. Now you think about, I think about, so I think about, you know, what I'm wearing around my waist. Back in the day, so the belt was like a sash. It was like a winding, it was a gartel. It was a winding wool band that goes around the waist of the Kohen, probably goes around it multiple times. So over here, if I'm comparing that to the two small headbands that are connecting the tzitz to the head, obviously that's much smaller. Amar krahu vanav davar shevela aron levanav. So the Gemara says, wait one second. So the Gemara says it can't be. Why not? Because if we're talking about the two straps that are connecting the tzitz to the head of the Kohen Gadol, so that is garments exclusive to the Kohen Gadol. That is not a garment that's worn by all Kohanim. If you look at the Psukim say, Hu Uvanav. In other words, this is a gift. This wool is a gift to be utilized and used by all Kohanim, Aaron and his sons. So it has to be something which is universal. And the straps that are connecting the tzitz to the head of the Kohen Gadol is not universal. It's only worn by the Kohen Gadol. So Davar Shava L'Aaron L'Vanav. So Avni Nami Lo Shave. So the Gemara says, wait one second, I'll counter. And my counter argument is, do you know that when it comes to the belt, it's not the same? The belt worn by the Kohen Gadol is not the same as the belt worn by your standard Kohen, your Kohen Hedjo. Hanich laman damar avnei shel Kohen lo, Hanich laman damar avnei shel Kohen Gadol lo, zehu avnei shel Kohen Hedjo. Shapir. The question is good, assuming that the belts are not the same. However, if you subscribe to the viewpoint that the belt worn by the Kohen Gadol is the same belt that's worn by Kohen Hedjot, and basically what the Gemara over here is recounting is a machlokas in terms of the construction of the belt of a Kohen Hedjot, meaning we know what the construction of the belt of Kohen Gadol is. It's shanis, as we described earlier. Is that going to be the same construct of a belt of a Kohen Hedjot? So it's a machlokas. So the Gemara says, so if that's true, that it's not the same, so then what are you going to say? So the Gemara says, Ma'ik lameimar, shem avne ba'olam. So the Gemara says, but the question's still not a compelling question. Because let's consider. When talking about a tzitz is only applicable by Kohen Gadol. Like there's nothing to discuss when talking about a tzitz and a Kohen Hedjot. There is no tzitz worn by Kohen Hedjot. When talking about a belt, okay, I'm with you. It could very well be that the construction of a belt for a Kohen Gadol is different than that of a Kohen Hedjot. But they're both wearing belts. So in other words, the material, the garment belt, at least is universal. Maybe subtle differences between how it's made versus a Kohen Gadol versus a Kohen Hedjot, but they both are wearing belts. So when asking the question, what is something that could be given to a Kohen that's going to be universally used by all Kohanim? So the answer is the Avni. That's the smallest garment that's worn by both of them. Aye, they may be different than one another. Fine, they're different than one another, but they're both belts. Lo hisbik litno. Itmar. The Gemara now records the following machlokas amarayim. We're on Kufla Mechesam Adalf. We're halfway down the Amud. And Gazazu Macharishona. Here's what we know. In order for the chiyuv to kick in, so you have to be shearing five sheep. You have to be owning five sheep. You have to be shearing five sheep. And here's how the progression went. You sheared a sheep. You sold that first sheep. You sheared the second sheep. You sold that second one. And now you eventually get to five sheep. But when you have shorn now the fifth sheep, the first four have already been sold. And the question is very simple. Do you have the obligation of rachis, I guess? And to put the question in other terms, when we have now said that in order for the mitzvah to occur, you need to have shorn five sheep, do those five sheep have to be under your possession at the conclusion? Or is it just simply enough that at the time of shearing, they were yours? So Rav Chisda Amar Chai, Rav Nosson Bar Oshia Amar Potter. So the Gemara records a machlokas on this very question, and the Gemara explains each side of the machlokas. Rav Chisda Amar Chayev Deha Gazaz. Rav Chisda says you're chayev because when all said and done, you have shorn your sheep. It's true that by the end of the fifth sheep, the first four are no longer in your possession. Doesn't matter. When you have shorn the first sheep, it was in your possession. Same with the second, same with the third. Either not yours by the time you finished, it doesn't matter. Rabbi Nasan Baruch Amar Patam Be'ina Tekam Malashi Rabbi Inam Son Cha Veleka. Well, we know that the Torah says that there has to be possession. Son Cha. We spent a lot of time earlier in the Masechta talking about this idea that the sheep have to be yours. The Mishnah told us that the sheep have to belong to you. And so if the sheep have to belong to you, so when you get to the end of the shear, there has to be tzoncha. It has to be your sheep from 1 through 5. And if at the time when you get to the end of the shear, it's no longer yours, so then there is no obligation. Tanan, the Gemara says, well, let's consider now what we learned back in the Mishnah. The Gemara reports, I guess. If you were to purchase the fleece from a non-Jew, you're going to be pater from Rashi's, I guess. Because the sheep was not owned by you, and all you did was buy the fleece, there's no obligation. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. Now let's make a diuk in the Mishnah. Hatsono ligzos chayev. Now the Gemara says, look, when the Mishnah is making a point, the inference that we're going to learn from that point is going to be as scaled back as one can imagine. And over here, the Gemara says like this. If I buy, and I only buy the fleece from the guy, so then I'm going to be pater. What would be a scenario in which I'd be chayev? So we're going to now go to a case that is as most similar as possible. And it goes like this. I go over to the guy and say, look, I want to buy the sheep from you, but with a simple buyback policy. Meaning, I'm going to buy the sheep from you, then I'm going to have full ownership of the sheep, I'm going to shear it, and I'm going to sell you back the sheep. Good. And he's totally agreeable to such an arrangement. What exactly, why exactly you made this kind of arrangement? What would be the business benefit of it? So I need somebody who knows more business than I do to explain why. But it doesn't matter. For our purposes right now, that would be a case in which you'd be chayev. So let's take this into consideration. So I buy the sheep for the fleece, I shear it, and then immediately I sell it back to the guy. Now, the Mishnah doesn't say it, but that's the diuk in the Mishnah. And now, if this is true, so then this lands exactly on the side of Rav Chisda. At the time when you shorn it, it was yours. Mm-hmm. When you get to the full shear, you're not in possession of all five. And seemingly the Mishnah is saying, again, the Mishnah doesn't say it. The Diuk in the Mishnah is telling us that you'd be chayav. And this goes like just like Rav Chista. So, halokech yisrono shol v'kochavim patam rishus hagez hatzon aligzos chayav. Amai kochav achab basa giza nafkelem rishusay. Now, in the arrangement that we constructed, I sold it back to the goy immediately after I shorn it. And meanwhile, I'd be obligated. So, tirgam Rav Chista, aliba de Rav Nassim Barosha, kagon she hiknan lo kol shoshim yom. So Rav Chista now defends Rav Nassim Bar Oshia. And this is one of those parts of debate that you have to understand. When the Gemara is having a machlokas, it's not a debate. Meaning they're not debating for the sake of debating. In other words, they want to arrive at the truth. I, the Mishnah, seems to sound like Rav Chista. Rav Chista comes out and says, yeah, but I could defend Rav Nassim Bar Oshia. They're not interested in debating. They're interested in obtaining the truth. The Mishnah is not a raya for me, says Rav Chista. I can easily defend Rav Nassim Bar Oshia. The arrangement could very well be that I'm going to buy the sheep from the guy. I'm going to have we're going to agree to a buyback policy where he's going to buy it back for me. But it could very well be that I bought it for 30 days. Now, the number 30 over here is nothing. There's nothing magical about the number 30. It just simply means I bought it for an extended period of time. And so now, when I shorn all five sheep, so the sheep were in my possession, all five of them at the same time. And so that's how we could read the Mishnah. That's how we could be medayik in the Mishnah. And it's not a riot to me.
That's not the same case. If you sold it one.
Again, the Mishnah doesn't give us the case. The Mishnah, exactly. It's just the Diuk in the Mishnah, and once we're working with the Diuk in the Mishnah, so we have flexibility to tweak a little bit exactly what the case is. Halakech geisono, halakech geisono shel chavero, mantana deicha diika shiurei gabi mocher basar mocher azlina. Okay, what we learn back in the Mishnah is the following: I bought fleece from my friend. We're talking about two Jews, one buying from another, and so. He sold me most of his fleece. Okay? So now the question is very simple. Which one of us is obligated to raise his hages? Buyer or seller? And the answer is, says the Mishnah, the seller. As long as he retained some of the fleece. If he sold me all of his fleece, so then that means that what did he in turn sell me? Not only did he sell me fleece, but he also sold me the raishis hages as well. Where then now I in turn have to now take it and give it over to the Kohen. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. The Gemara now is seeking, so that's interesting. So when a mocher is selling something, he's retaining his mitzvah right. Who subscribes to that viewpoint? So the Gemara says, well, I think I know the answer, and it's based on a Mishnah and Peah. The Gemara is going to give a couple suggestions. Amar Rav Chista, Rabbi Yehuda. So the first suggestion of the Gemara is that it is the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda in a Mishnah and Peah. Did not. Hamocher kalche ilam besoch sadeu. So let's say I sell somebody trees. Now, kalche ilan means the stalks of the tree. But in other words, basically, not the land underneath, but I'm just selling the trees. Besoch sadeo. And so now we have a very odd field in terms of ownership. The land is owned by one person. The trees are owned by another. Fine. No simpe alechol echa ve'echad. Now that these trees are segregated, because the land separating these trees are no longer owned by one person, so now the mitzvah of peah is on each tree individually. On your typical field that's owned by one person, you simply have to mark off one corner of the field and one tree, and again, based on the ratios we learned earlier, a 60th is going to be given over to the Kohen. Fine. But over here now, because the trees are independent of one another, independence created by the fact that the land is owned by somebody else, so the Mishnah tells us, no simpe lechol echa ve'echad. So a corner of each tree needs to be apportioned over to an ani. Yeah, it's going to be a little bit confusing and complicated. How do I mark off a corner of one tree? Good. Let the mefarshim work that out. Am Rav Yehuda emesa bezman shelo shir bal hasada. Aval shir bal hasada no simpeya al hakol. That's true if the owner of the field did not leave any trees for himself. But if the owner of the field, when selling the trees of the field, left over from the field trees of his own, so then he has retained the mitzvah. So over here we have a Mishnah Peah, the Sheet of Rav Yehuda, where that is if the mocher is keeping things to himself, he's retaining the mitzvah right. Seemingly that coordinates with our Mishnah. Now Amar le Rava v'hamar hu d'amar v'hu shehischa ba'asada liksor. That Mishnah over there is a little bit different. That's talking about a scenario where harvesting already started. V'chitim achanami v'hu shehischa l'gzoz. So the Gemara says, and maybe you'll tell me the same thing is true over here. So the Gemara says, no. No, in terms of the obligation of peah, and when the obligation begins, The Torah is very, very clear. Uvekutzrichem es ketziarzchem, when you start the harvest, that is the point in time where now your entire field is subject to the mitzvah peah. And so therefore, the owner of the field started harvesting, and that now puts an obligation, levels an obligation on the entire field for the mitzvah peah. And as long as he doesn't sell every tree, so by him retaining any amount of trees, he's retaining the peah obligation. But over here, as far as the mitzvah ratios again, so we know. The chiyav doesn't start when you start shearing animal number one. In fact, there is no chiyav by animal number one. Now you have to get to five sheep in order for the chiyav to even begin. So you can't compare the mitzvah peah to the mitzvah of rishis hageis. So elama Rava, hi tanahu. So Rava says, okay, you're right. So the Mishnah peah does not speak to our discussion. However, a Mishnah chulin does speak to our discussion. A Mishnah chulin that we learned not so long ago did not. Amala mechor li b'nei me'ah shel parazu v'ayah behen matanos nosan lakon ve'ein menakalom en adamim lakach mimene b'mishka nosan lakon menakalom en adamim. This Mishnah gets a lot of airplay here in our Masechta. The Mishnah over here talks about the guy who's buying the intestines, all the intestines, from the entire GI tract from a butcher. And in doing so, so now he's also bought the keva, the fourth stomach part of the GI tract. So he bought the fourth stomach from the shochet, from the tabach. Now over here, he paid for all of it, but wait one second. The fourth stomach, the keva, was not the tabach's to sell, and not the buyers to buy. That was part of Manas Kahuna. That needs to be given over to the Kohen. Fine. So the Mishnah's real focus is in terms of reimbursement. Can the buyer demand a reimbursement for having paid for that? Well, the Mishnah says it's actually really simple. If you're buying the GI tract as just simply a unit, so then there is no reimbursement because both the seller and the buyer both know that the keva is not for sale. And so when you bought the GI tract as a unit, as a full entity, so then you're paying for everything but the keva. That's understood. But if he's selling it to you by weight and you're paying per pound and the keva went on the scale, so now the buyer can expect a reimbursement for the keva that he paid for because he shouldn't have paid for that and therefore he can demand a reimbursement from that. That's the point of the Mishnah. We're now using the Mishnah to extract a different point altogether. What point are we learning from that Mishnah? So see as we turn out to the top of the next Amud, Amma Matnos Dekon Lomaz Meninish. So what we're learning over there is as far as the Matnos Kohen, the gifts that are dedicated to the Kohen, that's simply not part of the sale. Meaning the Tavach really retains the right to give it. Now, I say he retains the right to give it. He didn't do a good job with that right. Meaning he ended up giving it to the buyer. But, quote unquote, selling it to the buyer. But, in other words, but principally, it was his to give. So Amma Manas Kohen Lomaz Beninish, Hachanami Manas Kohen Lomaz Beninish, Hilkach Shaira Mocher, Mocher Chayev. And therefore, in the case of Rishis Hageis, as long as the Mocher has retained anything for himself, so that means that he retained the right to give to the Kohen. Da Amar Lelokeach, Matan de Kohen Gabechi. And the buyer says to the seller, yeah, you know who's responsible for the Rishis Hageis? You. Why? Because you retain wool. And once you retain wool, you retain that right to give it. So Lo Shaira Lokeach Chayev. On the other hand, if there wasn't any wool that was retained by the seller. Seller sold all of his fleece to the buyer. So now the seller says to the buyer, okay, now you're responsible. And he says to him, look, obviously I gave you all the fleece. I didn't retain any for myself. So that Matnas Kahuna now is part of what I sold you. Obviously I didn't sell you the Matnas Kahuna, meaning because you can't sell the Matnas Kahuna, it's a Matana. But in other words, it's no longer by me, it's now by you, and you have the obligation to give. Okay, Adkan. Hadron Lachrishis. I guess that is the end of the 11th parak of the Masechta. We'll stop over here tomorrow. We open up with the final parak of the Masechta. This week, we get to finish both the parak and the Masechta as well. I bet you can guess what we're going to be making a siyum on Friday morning.